So on the Let Me Explain podcast, we have been bringing you through the manifestos as they've been launched, and today, the first of our party leader interviews. Let Me Explain.
Let Me Explain with Sean Defoe, a News Talk original.
Thanks for listening to the Let Me Explain podcast, and don't forget to subscribe wherever it is you're listening. Throughout the general election, we're providing you plenty of coverage. We're going through the manifestos, we're saying how each party is likely to get on, and we are going to be interviewing the party leaders throughout the campaign as well. And joining me in studio for the first of those interviews is the Labour leader, Ivana Bacik. Ivana Bacik, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Sean. Delighted to be here and thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for coming on. So, how have you been getting on? It's been sort of helter-skelter. I feel like I haven't sat down for longer than 2 minutes in this entire campaign unless we're in a studio. How have you been getting on?
Well, it is delightful to be sitting down here in a studio because we are out all the time. And as you say, the campaign has been intense, but it is good to be finally in the campaign with the fixed date of the 29th November, because, of course, there's been such a phony war going on for so long with the Taoiseach, the open secret that the Taoiseach would be calling the election before Christmas. So we've all been out canvassing pretty much since the local and European elections. It hasn't stopped. And indeed, the campaign hasn't stopped. So as a result, you know, the idea that we're now less than 2 weeks away from polling date seems extraordinary. But time takes on its own meaning in an election campaign, Sean, as you'll be aware. Mm. And when you're running around all the time, you know, each day brings a huge amount of different issues and events. So, but it's great. You know, it's positive. I love it. I love canvassing. I like being out and about. I like being out with all our candidates. And we've got a bit of momentum, which is lovely.
Yes. Yeah, so let's start with that, because there's a poll out today as we are recording. Has Labour on 5%, the largest of the other parties, if you like, excluding Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin. Where do you think that positions you in terms of seats and transferring what it looks like a low amount nationally, but obviously it's very geographic?
It is. It's very geographic. It's very targeted. Obviously, we're running 32 candidates across the country. So we're not running in every constituency, but we are running candidates who we feel have a really strong chance. And we are really hopeful we'll make gains in the election, just as we did indeed in the local and European elections in June, where for the first time in 10 years, Sean, we brought back an MEP for Labour, Eoin O'Riordan, who's now representing us so well and so strongly in Brussels, who's already really made an impact through his emphasis on housing, his a generation of the idea for a housing commissioner that has really now been established. So, you know, that's the kind of momentum that we bring. We have 57 councillors. We elected 56 for Labour in the election in June. And of course, since then, we've seen Councillor Frances Timmins, an independent, joining us and running for us in Dublin Midwest. So we're really excited about the campaign, about the way in which our candidates are doing on the doors. Labour has a really strong record of being rooted in communities. Our councillors are incredibly active and incredibly hardworking and committed. And I think that's going to really show through now in the election.
Do you have a seats target that you're happy to share?
Well, we hope to see each one of our 32 candidates elected, of course. So, you know, we'll be, but we are looking to make gains. Clearly, we're looking to make gains, and I think we're coming from a strong position. And as I say, our candidates are reporting really strong responses on the doors. There's a real appetite there for Labour's message of constructive change. And we saw that appetite absolutely borne out in the by-election in 2021 in Dublin Bay South when I was elected. I mean, that's the first and only electoral contest since COVID and since 2020 that resulted in a change in the Dáil arithmetic. And, you know, we won that against the odds and against poll predictions. So I think it shows the appetite that's out there, and even more now in this campaign where we see people really, really pinched, really squeezed by the cost of living crisis, by housing costs in particular, but also by childcare costs, by the cost of your GP visit, 60 or 70 euro every time you need to visit a GP. Loads of children who've just aged out of free GP care, a Labour initiative originally. We want to see that. We want to see that addressed in the coming election. We want to see the next government really taking on our Labour vision of free GP care for all children under 18. We want to see our vision of a universal childcare scheme, publicly provided childcare with a cap on costs per child, you know, 50 euro per child per week. Nobody should be paying more than that for childcare in a European country that's running budget surpluses. And we want to see the housing crisis addressed. I mean, that's the absolute priority, because that is what's really driving a cost of living crisis for people, is just unaffordable rents, unaffordable house prices, and so many people seeing no way of owning their own home. And that's why so many young people emigrating. So these are the kind of things that we want to change. And that's why we're running such a strong campaign across the country.
Yeah, the childcare one, in fairness, I think to Labour, you were out on this for quite a while, but other people have stolen your clothes in this, and that everybody seems to be promising 200 euro childcare a month. When you get into that argument of going to the doors and saying, here's why we're different, because in a lot of constituencies, there will be a centre left seat and it's between yourselves and the Soc Dems and the Greens or maybe an independent or whoever. When you're pitching to voters, how do you say, even though broad spectrum, the beliefs are the same, here's why Labour is different and you should vote for us?
Well, I think it's a great question, and it's a question that voters are asking us. And I think it's really important that we say we're a party that's serious about delivering change. We're the only opposition party that has ever served in government, and we are a party of deep roots and green shoots. So we're very committed to delivering on the sort of commitments, on the sort of priorities that we've set out. And as you've said, Sean, childcare and early years education is one of those. We've said now, and I've said it consistently since I became party leader 2 years ago, that childcare has to be dealt with in a completely radical new way. We need to have what I've described as a Niamh Branagh moment, where instead of spending a lot of money to prop up private providers, what we need to do is ensure that every child is guaranteed a preschool place. This happened in the 60s. Then Fianna Fáil Minister Donal O'Malley said every child in Ireland must have access to a secondary school place. And that laid the seeds for Ireland's prosperity, for the growth of our country and the growth of our children and their children. So that's what we need to see now in childcare. So it's not just about capping fees, although that's important for parents who are struggling. It's also about changing the whole premise of our model of childcare so that it is state provided, not just state subsidised as it is at present, but it's state provided, that childcare workers are paid as teachers, that we actually value early years and preschool education in the same way that we value primary and secondary education. And that would mean that every child would have a place, because so many parents are saying to me, it's not even just about the cost, it's about trying to get a creche place for their
child. Where are you going to find these people? Because we know so many teachers are gone out of the country, it's thousands of them, and we know there is a real recruitment issue when it comes to creches and to early education.
It's really interesting, and you know, I've delved into this. I've met with educators at third level who are teaching childcare workers, who are bringing forward graduates who have the skills and the expertise to deliver childcare and early years education. And what they've told me is that they despair to see so many of their young graduates emigrating to find work abroad. Why? Because childcare workers in Ireland are not sufficiently valued, because creche operators themselves are telling me they're struggling to pay basic wages to childcare workers. So the system is simply not working. It's failing those who are working in it, who aren't getting decent pay. It's failing providers who can't meet the costs of provision. And of course, it's failing parents and most of all children. And that's why, you know, in our children's charter that we're launching in our manifesto, we're guaranteeing that children will have access to preschool place, that the state will underwrite the system and will provide the system, and that we therefore will be changing our model of provision, just as we changed secondary. If people say it can't be done, we did it with secondary education in the 60s. It has to be done again.
So is that the state subsidising the salaries effectively, making it more attractive financially for those people to come back to Ireland?
Precisely.
To what degree would the state, and how much would that cost the state?
Well, we've costed it, we're rolling out first at 50 million to do this as a first phase in the first year of operation. And coupled with that, 170 million to cap the costs of fees for parents. The reality is the state is already, that's extra to what has already been spent. Mm. It's not a huge sum, and people are often surprised, you know, that it isn't more. But the reality is that the state's already paying quite significant amounts of money through subsidising the ECHI scheme, subsidising private providers. But it's money that's not being spent in the most cost effective or impactful way for parents and children. So, you know, one of the things we've proposed, and again, it's not a huge cost, it's 5 million, is to create a childcare in situ scheme so that the state would underwrite creches that are closing due to being unable to meet costs. The state would simply step in and say, right, we're underwriting this, just as we're doing with tenant in situ now. So we're recognising that childcare is an absolute public good. It should be a public service. This isn't something that's, you know, hugely innovative elsewhere in Europe. Any of your listeners, Sean, with friends living in France or in Belgium or in Germany, will be aware that childcare is seen in that way and is valued as a public service there. And that's the model we want to move to here in Ireland.
You mentioned that manifesto. We're recording it before you launch it, but there's a couple of points you wanted to hit on, including leave bereavement leave and an expansion of that.
Yes. So for me personally, you know, women's rights, the right to choose, one of the reasons, one of the driving motivations that brought me into politics. Many of your listeners will not remember or will be too young to remember the late 80s, early 90s. But as a student activist then, I was brought to court and threatened with prison for providing women with information on abortion at a time when that was illegal, at the time when we really had to fight for basic rights, for condoms to be legalised, for divorce to be legalised, for LGBTQ rights. Happily, we have moved on significantly in Irish society, and I was proud to play a role, particularly in marriage equality and in repeal campaigns. But we still lack compassion for women on reproductive health and reproductive rights in so many ways. And one key issue for Labour that I've been campaigning on for years is to ensure that we build into our law recognition of the right to have leave where women suffer pregnancy loss or miscarriage. Currently, women who endure early pregnancy loss, early miscarriage of pregnancy, have no specific entitlement to paid leave in their workplace. Many employers are very, you know, of course, very compassionate in offering leave. Many women, however, are having to take sick leave. That's not appropriate. We should have a specific standalone right to reproductive health care leave, not only for women enduring miscarriage, but also for shorter periods of time for those employees who need time off work for IVF, fertility treatment. And that's what we proposed in a bill now some years ago, up to 20 days paid leave for miscarriage for leave for miscarriage, and up to 10 days leave for IVF. The government agreed in principle, I should say, with this, but unfortunately have stalled and delayed. Our bill would be an absolute priority for us if in government.
One of the other proposals and the big issues of this campaign is housing. You've proposed a state construction company ramping up to 50,000 homes a year. Again, where are you going to find the workers to do that? Because we've seen home building stall this year after increasing for a number of years.
Well, housing is the number one issue that's coming up on doors, along with cost of living, of course, but lack of housing and unaffordable rents and mortgages, huge issue for so many people. Clearly for Labour, the difference we would make in government is to ensure a massive state-led programme of construction through the Land Development Agency, which we would transform into a state construction company. We supported the Land Development Agency. We think it's a good idea from government, but let's transform it. Let's upskill and upscale the capacity there. And one of the ways, therefore, we grow the construction industry and the number of construction workers is through offering people decent, secure jobs. A huge scourge of, self-employment, bogus self-employment across construction as elsewhere. And that's something in Labour we want to contest. But interestingly, Sean, it doesn't require that many more workers. There's 170,000 people currently employed in construction, but a large proportion are employed on big public infrastructure projects or indeed on commercial non-residential projects. And looking, you know, and speaking with developers and builders, as I do, and those in the construction industry, they tell me pivoting people back into residential will actually provide a large amount of the capacity. So in other words, it's not that we need to increase by huge numbers. Indeed, with decent productivity, about 20,000 more people would see us being able to meet those targets of 50,000 new homes per year that's so essential. But it's also about offering people decent pathways into work. So, you know, ensuring that apprentices are paid better. We have a 20% slippage attrition rate out of apprenticeship programmes currently. Why? That's crazy. When, you know, everywhere is calling out for skilled trades people, skilled craft workers. Let's move on that. Let's move on attracting more young women into apprenticeships. Mm. Australia has done a huge amount of work on this, and it's a big programme to bring more women in, to take positive action measures. Let's fund programmes like the one in my own constituency, the Construction Skills Course. St Andrews Resource Centre is running with Dublin Port. I've been in there. I've met some of the young guys. They are mostly guys who are coming off a 3-week intensive skills programme and able to walk onto a construction site and get basic work as a labourer on the site. Hugely productive programme. And that's the sort of thing that we need to see funded.
You mentioned that constituency, Dublin Bay South, a bear pit of a constituency. I think a lot of pundits
yes.
view it. Very difficult one. You've got Fine Gael pushing for a seat. You've got the Greens trying to retain. You've got yourself, Sinn Féin, Fianna Fáil, Kate O'Connell running as an independent. Are you confident? Are you worried? It's, you know, you've won on a by-election. Now you're heading into this. You've also got the responsibilities of a leader, which are taking you here, there and everywhere. Tough one.
It's certainly a crowded field in Dublin Bay South, but it's a job I absolutely love. I was so honoured to be elected in 21 to represent my community. It's where I grew up. It's where I've reared my kids. It's where I live. And I just absolutely love the work. And representing my community has just been the honour of my life. So I'm fighting hard, to be re-elected. We don't take anything for granted in Dunblane South. I have teams out all the time canvassing, and I'm out myself all the time. I never miss residents' meetings. I just, absolutely will be fighting tooth and nail for every vote in the constituency. And, we're getting very positive response in the doors. And of course, we had a very good result in the local elections. Wonderful new councillor elected, Fiona Connolly, and our very experienced councillor, Dermot Lacey, re-elected. So very proud of our team in Dublin Bay South. And I very much hope we'll be able to hold there.
Now, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, according to some Sunday newspapers, have been making eyes over at the Labour Party, trying to play footsie under the table and maybe eyeing you up as a coalition partner. Is Labour as equally open or thrilled about that prospect?
Well, I certainly read the reports in the papers, and I suppose the first thing to say is that there's been a real contrived conflict going on between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in this election, and it simply doesn't ring true. Voters are deeply frustrated to see this sort of, scripted spat or scripted scrap going on between two parties that were literally in government together and voting for each other's policies until 10 days ago. So I think that's contrived. I think people are looking to make headlines any way they can. But look, what I've been absolutely consistent about saying for many months now is that the first thing, during this campaign, my priority is to ensure the maximum number of Labour TDs are elected, that we see real support grow in our communities for Labour values and a Labour vision of change, because that's how we deliver for communities that are crying out for housing and childcare and healthcare and disability services. But after the election and after the people have spoken, I'll go first to the leaders of the Green, Social Democratic, centre-left parties and groupings and look to forge a common platform for change to deliver on what are our shared policies and our shared vision. There may be small differences, but we have a shared vision of change, which is about public state investment in services. So let's form a negotiating bloc. Let's go into programme for government formation talks with that critical mass, because I'm very serious about delivering change. I'm very anxious to ensure that the next government will be strongly influenced and their policies shaped by a centre-left vision of change. And I think the best way to do that is from that common negotiating platform idea, that position of strength.
Is that partially built out of past history where we've seen Labour go in, get a kicking after an election, we've seen the Greens go in, get a kicking after an election, and that actually if there is a bloc of more than 10, 12, 15 seats on the left, if there was a five-party coalition with a left-wing rump as opposed to, a two- or three-party, that actually more could get done, you have more power, you have more sway?
Clearly, in a democracy, in a democracy where voters do not deliver one single party government, and we seem to have gone beyond that, although, of course, we never know what will happen in an election. But in a democracy where you may have a multi-party government emerging, I think it's critical that you have a bloc with the maximum numbers possible to make an impact. And, conversely, in order to make an impact, in order to deliver on policies that will change things for communities, we need to have more numbers. So, of course, I think the most sensible thing for anyone who's serious about delivering change, anyone who's serious about delivering for an environmental agenda on climate, for an agenda that looks at state-run, state-funded services, we need to be looking at collaborative and constructive politics together.
We are obviously working with, here in Newstalk, we work with a lot of the local and regional radio stations as well. Quite a big issue is the funding into the future. And we saw the government maybe pass up an opportunity to significantly change that. How does Labour see that funding for public service journalism and broadcasting as a whole going?
We've made a strong commitment to ensure adequate, sustainable funding for public service journalism, for regional journalism. We're not conscious just how vitally important regional news media is across the country. And as we see the spread of disinformation, the rise of the far right internationally, it's even more critical that we fund public service broadcasting. So that's an absolute priority for us. Indeed, in our manifesto, we're committing to a Department of Digital Communication to be coupled with the Department of Further and Higher Education, because we need to see really strong regulation on social media. We need to see strong governance models for artificial intelligence and to ensure that we don't have a rise of disinformation, undue impact of disinformation, and indeed to guard against the sort of interference in democratic elections and the democratic process that we've seen in other countries because of a lack of regulation of the media space. So we're really keen to ensure that that public service media, that professional broadcasters, professional journalism is funded and supported.
Mm. We're going to see for the first time this election no moratorium, which will be interesting because it's usually a time we get to kick back and kick up as broadcasters, maybe not so much. Do you have any election day routines when the work is done and people just have to go to the polls and you just have to agonisingly wait?
Well, on election day itself, of course, we continue to campaign, we continue to canvass because there's never been a canvassing moratorium. Obviously, we stay away from polling stations themselves, but in terms of canvassing. But of course, you know, I'll be voting. I'm excited about voting with my 18-year-old for the first time voter this year. And on the day after, on results day, I have a very, very strong commitment to going for a sea swim. So when the votes have all been made, and the following morning, as my team go down to the count, I stay away from the count the first few hours because it's so nerve wracking for a candidate. And I'll be going out to the South Wall and swimming at the glorious half moon with my mother, and we will just take an immersive dip in the freezing cold water. And it's the most brilliant way of clearing the head. It's the most beautiful place to swim. I have a fantastic group of swimmers. We call ourselves the Half Moon Mad Yolks, and there's a couple of hundred of us, and we don't all swim there at the same time, but we have a fantastic regular swim spot there. And it's just to be out in the waters of Dublin Bay looking at the horizon and looking at the wonderful Poolbeg Towers, you know, that's puts a sense of perspective and it clears the head in anticipation of the count results coming in later that day.
Yeah, 20 minutes of escape from the stress of the rest of the day.
I don't think I'll last 20 minutes in the water in late November, Sean.
Well,
I'll be doing well, but 5 minutes in the water.
Yeah, that's why we need June elections for sea swimmers. Very finally, I was going to ask you this, and I'm asking this to all our candidates. I think you may have answered it before we were chatting, but tell us something no one knows about Ivana Bacic.
Well, as you say, Sean, we did have a momentary discussion about karaoke, and I revealed that I cannot sing a note. And therefore, some years ago, in an attempt to have a karaoke song I could impress people with at parties, I went to a dear friend of mine for singing lessons. I asked him, could I learn how to sing The Human League's Don't You Want Me Baby, an old classic favourite of mine. And he kindly informed me that it was, quote, out of my range. And so, as a result, I can reveal that my karaoke song that Tony Flynn has trained me in is a much easier song in a lower level, Johnny Cash, Ring of Fire. There you are. I've never revealed that publicly to anyone before.
No, so if things go, I don't know, I was going to say if things go badly, maybe if things go well, we might see you on November 30th in a karaoke bar in Dublin singing Ring of Fire.
I think it's unlikely you'll ever see me singing that publicly. It's only known to a very small circle of friends and now your podcast listeners. So there you are.
What have I done? Ivana Bacic, leader of the Labour Party. Thanks so much for joining us on the Let Me Explain podcast. Really appreciate it. We will be doing interviews with hopefully all of the leaders throughout this campaign. And keep an eye on your podcast feeds. Don't forget to subscribe for plenty more, both from the manifestos and the leaders themselves. Thanks for listening.